The call came in during the early morning hours, that specific time of night when the city is at its quietest and the air feels heavy with a chill that has nothing to do with the temperature. When I stepped into the apartment, the silence was absolute, a stark contrast to the chaotic blue and red lights pulsing against the drawn blinds outside. There is a particular smell to a scene where a life has been extinguished too soon. A mixture of unwashed laundry, stale food, and the metallic tang of something far more sinister. I found the first responder standing near the kitchen, his face a mask of practiced neutrality that couldn't quite hide the hollowness in his eyes. He pointed toward the back of the unit without saying a word. In the master bedroom, tucked away in the furthest corner of a walk-in closet, sat a small metal chair. It looked out of place among the hanging coats and discarded shoeboxes. A cold piece of industrial furniture that had been turned into a makeshift station of misery. It was there that the reality of the situation took hold, not in the blood or the bruises, but in the small, colorful ribbons and strips of a torn scarf that lay discarded on the floor. I looked down at the tiny form that had been carried out just minutes before my arrival. This was a place where a child should have felt safe. Yet every inch of the cramped space felt like a trap designed by the very people sworn to protect him. The victim was a 2-year-old boy named Jeremiah Williams. My investigation began with a chronological reconstruction of the 48 hours leading up to that morning call. According to the initial statements provided by the mother, Franjessica Williams, the household had been under significant stress due to what she described as behavioral issues with the toddler. I spent hours reviewing the mother's history and the living conditions within that Dallas apartment. Neighbors reported hearing intermittent thumping and the muffled cries of a child, but none had called the police, assuming it was standard disciplinary action. On the Tuesday before the discovery, Franjessica claimed that Jeremiah had refused to stay in a designated timeout corner. Her response to this perceived defiance was a series of escalations that transformed a routine day into a nightmare. She admitted to me during the first interview that she had struck the boy multiple times with both an open hand and a switch. As I documented the injuries, it became clear that this was not a single moment of lost temper, but a sustained period of physical abuse. The child had not been fed for the duration of the day, a fact the mother stated with a chilling lack of remorse. When the physical striking failed to produce the submission she demanded, she moved to a more permanent form of restraint. She used a belt and a scarf to bind the boy's hands and feet together. When he managed to loosen the scarf in a desperate struggle for comfort, she retightened the bindings until his wrists and ankles began to turn a deep bruised purple. This was the lead-up to the final act of the evening. She carried the bound toddler upstairs and placed him on that metal chair inside the closet, closing the door and leaving him in total darkness for the remainder of the night. The forensic evidence gathered from that closet provided the most damning narrative of Jeremiah's final hours. When our digital and forensic teams processed the scene, we found strands of the scarf still caught in the hinges of the metal chair, evidence of the child's struggle to free himself. The autopsy report arrived on my desk several days later, and the findings were a clinical roadmap of systemic failure. Jeremiah's body was covered in varying stages of bruising, indicating that the abuse was a recurring element of his short life. The cause of death was linked to the combined effects of the physical trauma and the prolonged restraint which had restricted his circulation and breathing while he sat upright in that closet. We recovered a series of digital communications from the mother's phone that showed a pattern of frustration and resentment toward the child. There were messages sent to acquaintances complaining about the toddler's behavior, framed in a way that sought to justify the extreme measures she was taking. These records were vital because they dismantled the defense of a sudden tragic accident. The forensic tech pointed out that the bindings had been applied with such force that they left indentations in the skin that remained even after death. We also found evidence of older injuries, including healing fractures, that suggested this was a household where violence was the primary language of communication. Every piece of tape, every ribbon, and every scrap of cloth found in that apartment was cataloged as a weapon. The evidence didn't just show how he died, it showed the calculated nature of the confinement. The closet door had been obstructed from the outside to ensure the boy could not push his way out. turning a storage space into a cell. The legal proceedings followed swiftly after the evidence was presented to the district attorney. Fran Jessica Williams was initially booked into the Dallas County Jail on a charge of injury to a child, which is a first-degree felony in the state of Texas. As the medical examiner's final reports were filed, and the full extent of the binding and the overnight abandonment was brought to light, the charges were reviewed for an upgrade to capital murder. During the court appearances, the prosecution detailed the specific timeline of the Tuesday evening, focusing heavily on the fact that the child was left bound and starving in a dark closet while the mother went about her evening. The defense attempted to argue that there was no intent to kill, only a misguided and extreme attempt at discipline. However, the physical evidence of the purpled extremities and the metal chair contradicted the narrative of a simple mistake. The legal outcome focused on the failure of the caregiver to provide the most basic level of protection and the active role she played in the child's suffering. Sentencing in these cases often reflects the community's outrage, and the state of Texas maintains some of the strictest penalties for crimes against children. The finality of the case came with a conviction that ensured the mother would face decades behind bars, separated from the society she had violated through her actions. There were no further suspects in the case, as the investigation concluded that the mother was the sole person responsible for the environment inside the apartment. The file was eventually closed and moved to the archives, leaving behind a record of a 2-year-old boy who became a statistic in a system that discovered him far too late. The metal chair and the ribbons were moved to an evidence locker, the only tangible remains of a life that ended in a closet on a Tuesday night in Dallas.